White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 383.
It's the Avengers Assemble podcast from the Jarvis Heads of AvengersAssemble.net. Now, here's your host, Van Allen Plexico.
Hello, and welcome to the Avengers Assemble podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, along with all of our great supporters via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico. And I am joined today by my old friend, Michael Gordon. Welcome aboard the show, Michael.
Howdy.
Michael, you are best known as one of the long-standing co-hosts of the ESO, the Earth Station One podcast and its network. And we all, you know, which this whole network was once affiliated with, and before we kind of grew up and went off, left the nest and went off on our own. And we have great fond memories of those days. And So what are you up to now, and what brought you on board?
Well, as far as the podcast goes, you know, Earth Station One is chugging along, and we are going to hit episode 500 this year, which is just...
That's amazing.
Yeah, insane to think. I mean, we've been doing this for at least 9 years. So it's been an incredible ride so far, and full of opportunities, like this one here. But and then also, of course, with my my books, I'm working on Tiki Zombie issue number 4, which is the comic series that I write and publish. And we're actually going to be starting a Kickstarter for that pretty soon. So people can check that out at TikiZombie.net. And that's I'm really looking forward to that. Of course, that's daunting. But yeah, but I am happy to be here. And, you know, it's funny because an Avengers podcast, I listen to you, a lot of your shows, but an Avengers podcast is probably the last one that I thought I would be on. Just because my history with the Avengers is really, really, like, low.
Mm. But you suggested a topic that was of current interest to you, and it seemed like a good place to plug it in. And what was that?
Well, the Infinity Gauntlet. I thought it was about time that I read it. Certainly with the Avengers Endgame movie coming out this year. And I do enjoy the Marvel movies very much. I've been a comic reader for over 40 years. And I'm not unfamiliar with Marvel comics. But my two main heroes growing up and to this day are Spider-Man and then over on the DC side, Batman. But I've always sort of leaned more towards the DC end of things. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of Marvel history, I'm familiar with some of the characters roughly, but not really in depth. So a lot of the Avengers storylines, a lot of the Infinity Gauntlet and the space stuff, I'm just not as familiar with. So I thought it was about time I read this.
And having the movies, right? I mean,
yes.
You saw the movie. You saw the Infinity War.
Yep, I've seen every Marvel movie. So that the decade of Marvel Universe MCU, I've been there.
Yes, yeah, right. And so you figured maybe check out the comic that it's loosely based on. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about is I don't want to do it nothing but just comparison. That'd be boring. We're going to talk about the story. We're going to talk about your reaction, your thoughts, and all that. But it is, you know. There, when I went back and reread it last night in preparation for this show, I was surprised, having just rewatched the movie in January, I was surprised that there were as many common moments as there were, because in my old memory, right, my sort of faded out memory from the last time I read it, I was thinking that there was not that much overlap, honestly. And there actually are several very specific moments in the comic that it looks like they at least got inspiration from for the movie. Of course, there's a whole lot in the comics that's not in the movie, and there's a whole lot in the movies that's not in the comics, you know. So they're different animals in a large degree, plus the fact that the movie's called Infinity War, and yet the Infinity War storyline really has nothing to do with what was in the movie at all. It's a whole other thing, so... So we're just going to have a conversation about this comic. So before we actually dig into it, what did you kind of expect you would find? Did you think this was going to be very similar to the movie? What was your pre-existing knowledge or thoughts about this comic book miniseries back in history before you actually read it?
Well, I actually don't remember when it originally came out. I mean, I know it was in the 90s and the early 90s, and I think I had just graduated from college and I was just getting back into comics. Because I took probably that, you know, that 4 year break where I didn't disassociate like on purpose. It just was not a focus. So come back into the 90s and I'm looking for stuff. But I don't remember this being something that I mean, it could be because, you know, pre-college back in the 80s, I had been all in with events like Crisis on Infinite Earths for sure. Secret Wars and Secret Wars 2. And I think Secret Wars 2, because I not only bought the, what is it, 12 issue series, but the, I think it was like 50 tie-ins.
Jeez.
So yeah, I did sample like a lot of the Marvel Universe at the time. And I think I just was not satisfied. That's an understatement with that, with that whole mm-hmm. event and series and story and everything like that. So I probably was pretty against. I don't think I was actively against crossovers and events, but I think I'd just been burned out. And when I came back to it, it wasn't the first thing I wanted to jump back into.
Right.
So. And then over the years, it's just one of those stories that stayed in the stores. And I was like, okay, well, that's cool. And I thought that, going into Endgame, I was just like, oh, I just want to read some more. I want to experience some more about what this is about, because I was pretty confident, especially after talking to a couple of friends that had read it, I was pretty confident that it wouldn't spoil Endgame. Like,
right.
Like how, you know, everything that's led up to the movie, the big old, you know, cliffhanger that Infinity Gauntlet left us, or Infinity War left us, I should say. I was pretty sure that it wasn't going to, like, the solution wasn't going to be spoiled by this trade.
Yeah.
And I thought, if anything, you know, those things that you mentioned that are in this that appear in Infinity War are little like kind of Easter eggs. And I thought, well, if I read this prior to seeing Endgame, then maybe I'll pick up on some of those too.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. But yeah, my background real quick is I had kind of quit reading comics in high school. You know, it's the old story. You get into high school and other things get your attention for a few years. And so I missed out on basically the late 80s, early 90s, the whole period where the X-Men became the big thing and
right.
when comics got to be about 75 cents. I don't think I ever bought a comic that cost 75 cents to $1.50. I was out that entire period. I was out. And so come 1992, I was off in graduate school in Washington, D.C., and I found a comic shop in downtown D.C., and I was bored and lonely living up there by myself, and so I was just like, I'll go see what's in the comic shop. And they had, like, the first issue of Infinity War had just come out in 92, and I was like, oh, it's Jim Starlin writing Thanos and the Avengers. I'm in, right? I've got to read this. And I bought Infinity War, only to find out it was, like, the second part of a really big, you know, miniseries of miniserieses. And so I dug around and found out, you know, found the first six issues, Infinity Gauntlet. And it just absolutely blew my mind, because I love Starlin. I love Thanos. I love the Avengers. I love cosmic Marvel. And I love Warlock. And I love when they all kind of come together in a big event. I mean, my all-time favorite comic book story is Avengers Annual Number 7, Marvel 2 and 1 Annual Number 2, where Thanos tried to blow up all the stars using the Infinity Gems the first time. And I love that story. And that's the one where at the end, you know, Warlock basically turns Thanos to stone and then goes into the Soul Gem. And so this was the story of them, of Thanos coming back to life and Warlock having to come back to life to strategize against him. And I loved the whole idea that Warlock is the indispensable character. Now, this is one thing as we occasionally mention the movies. As you saw Avengers 3 and 4 looming on the horizon, and we knew that it was going to be Thanos, you didn't probably we weren't as aware of this as I was because you hadn't read the comics and it wasn't as much your thing before then, but I could see like an oncoming freight train that they were going to do the Thanos Infinity story without Warlock. And so it was very bittersweet for me, right? Because on the one hand, I'm like, they're going to do the Thanos Infinity story. And on the other hand, I'm like, they're going to leave out the most important main character. And it's like,
he is pretty important.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like if Lucas redid Star Wars from scratch and left out Luke Skywalker. You're like, well, yeah, you get Darth Vader and stuff, but you kind of need Luke too, you know? And so I kept thinking, all right, they're going to put out a Doctor Strange movie because he's a more marketable character than Warlock, probably. So they're going to, I said, you know what? You know, Warlock was the field general in this story. They're going to give that to Doctor Strange. And sure enough, right, the one that's behind the scenes doing all the pulling the levers and everything is Doctor Strange. It's not Warlock. So what did you think in terms of that? I mean, when you saw the movie, were you expecting anything differently, or did you have any expectations at that point? Like I was just
When I saw the first Avengers movie, and I think the last end credit tag is the first time we see Thanos in the MCU.
Oh yeah.
So I knew who he was, mm-hmm. But I didn't really like know who. Like I recognized, didn't know. I don't think I've ever read like a Thanos story before. So I was like, oh, that's their big bad, you know, and I knew that was going to be something that they built up to, which is what they've done. And I've sort of followed the, you know, the theories of the gems. But I got to tell you that in the book, even just going in when I've read this for the first time, you know, that first page or so where Thanos already has the gauntlet with all the gems, I was kind of surprised. I was like, oh, I thought this was going to be about him getting them. But nope, he's already got them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did want to talk about that for a second. I'm glad you mentioned that. I was the same way. You know, like I said, I went and picked this up after all six had come out and was also surprised you already had them. Of course, going into it, I didn't really know that they had different properties. And I think Starlin kind of retconned that in because, in fact, here's my little quick theory before I talk about the quest, okay? My theory is that in the 60s and 70s, Marvel artists just like to draw everybody having a little oval-shaped gemstone on their forehead. They just that was a big thing in the 60s, because, I mean, the Vision has it. It's not an – well, see, there you go, right? In the movies, it is an infinity gem. But the Vision's, right. The Vision's little gem on his forehead was never an infinity stone. That's a movie thing, okay? But others had it as well. The Destroyer had something like that. I mean, a bunch of them had these. It was just a little art thing they liked to do, is stick that little jewel on his forehead. It may go back to Michael Moorcock and the Jewel in the Skull, in fact. And so when they did the 77 story of the 1977 story of Marvel 2-in-1 Annual, you know, the Avengers Annual number 7, in that, Thanos just went out and gathered up the gems, including Warlock's Soul Gem, and they were all called Soul Gems, and they all basically did the same thing. So it was with this story that Starlin kind of like I said, he kind of retconned it that only one of them is a soul gem. In fact, I think they even mentioned that in his story where Thanos says something like, you know, really they shouldn't be called soul gems. Only one of them is the soul gem. There's the reality gem and the mind gem and the power gem and all that. So the fact that each one of them does something different really didn't start until this storyline. Now, there's a comic. I guess it came out of Silver Surfer or something, but there's a one-shot comic that Marvel put out, and I have a copy of it here called The Thanos Quest, the spine-chilling story of six stones containing the power to shape the universe and the madman who would possess them. And what's funny is if you look at the spine, it's like a comic that's thick enough that it's more square-bound, you know, like the old Avengers, like the old Marvel annuals used to be. And on the spine, I kid you not, all the way down the spine of this comic book, it literally says, The Thanos Quest, the spine-chilling story of the six stones containing the power to shape the universe, and the madman who would possess them, exclamation point. So they actually put that whole cover blurb down the spine. It's insane. But anyway, yeah, it's a pretty good story, and it's impossible to spoil because you already know he gets them all, right? So if you ever get a chance, or you listeners ever get a chance to read the Thanos Quest, it is worth getting just because all it is, right, it's one big comic with six parts, and each part is Thanos going after a different gem. But it's entertaining especially if you like Thanos, it's entertaining where he's the protagonist and you get to see the clever ways he comes up with to get these gemstones away from characters like the Stranger, the Gardener, the Grandmaster, you know, and there's a couple of others. So it is it's worth your time to read just for fun, because Thanos is a fun character when he's up to his nefariousness, you know. But after that, yeah, the Infinity Gauntlet, he's got him at the start of that story. So we can dig around a little bit into it, I guess. First, you know, so many things are different from the movie. First, what did you think about Mephisto being like he just pops up suddenly. He wasn't in the Thanos quest. But when you start this story, Mephisto is like his advisor. And immediately you got to be thinking, do you really want the devil to be your advisor, you know?
Yeah, I was kind of confused. I'm like, how did these guys hook up?
Mm-hmm. And I don't think we find out. I mean, I think it, like I said, a lot of this story comes out of the Silver Surfer that Starlin was writing at that time. So there may be some issue, like a tie-in, you know, where Thanos hooks up with Mephisto. But I thought it was very interesting how, and I think at one point somebody actually mentions it as an observation, that Mephisto is doing a really good job of claiming to be there to, like, help him. But what he's really doing is trying to control him and keep him from wreaking havoc. You know, like, no, don't do that yet, Thanos. Here's the reason why you should do something different. Thanos is like, I like it. Good idea, you know. He's a good character. Mephisto is a good character to be doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's one, I mean, I know enough of him that he's one that, you know, you don't trust, and you know he's trying to manipulate him with every suggestion that he's making.
Yeah, and like I said, this is a Silver Surfer story. Mephisto's probably closer tied to the Silver Surfer than any other hero, and I think that's because basically the Silver Surfer is Marvel Jesus, right? And so, of course, he has the devil character always popping up, tempting him and trying to... Stan wasn't very... He let it all hang out, you know? It wasn't subtle what Stan would do back in the day.
Not at all.
No, so... Yeah, so the Silver Surfer's Jesus and Mephisto is the devil. And that's one of the things that makes this story so interesting, is that at the very beginning, Thanos basically says, I am now God. And so the devil kind of has to kowtow even to Thanos, you know, but he can still whisper in his ear and try to shape how things play out. Another interesting thing early on in this story I thought was cool was I had forgotten, when we first get to Earth in the movie, I believe it's when the Hulk or Banner crashes down through Doctor Strange's roof.
I think it's, isn't it Surfer that comes through?
Well, I'm saying in the movie, it's the Hulk, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right.
So they copied that scene. They just changed which character it is because they couldn't use the Surfer. So, yeah, I just thought that was, again, they have some neat scenes in the comic, and in the movie, they do an interesting job, I think, of taking those scenes and just making them fit the movie story, just changing them a little bit. So you still get a character crashing through Doctor Strange's roof to warn him of what Thanos is doing. But in this case, it's the Silver Surfer, and he's about as scared to death as I've ever seen the Silver Surfer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, from the first minute he's in here, he's terrified.
Absolutely.
And I do understand that, you know, there's a lot of history, or at least a little bit of history before this, in the Silver Surfer book. Marvel's made it really simple to follow along the story as far as the collected editions. I mean, the version of the Infinity Gauntlet trade that I have, in the inside front cover, it lists actually the Infinity Gauntlet as the third of the saga of that you would want to acquire. The first one is Avengers versus Thanos, which is, I guess, a collection of early Thanos adventures. Mm. And then the Silver Surfer trade, which is the rebirth of Thanos. And then along with Infinity Gauntlet is a Silver Surfer collection, the Infinity Gauntlet collection, which I assume is the tie-ins.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
And then they have a list, and it goes, it's funny because it goes all the way up to like 18, because I guess that's how many they've they've come out with recently. And I think they just released it all in a slipcase of like 12 hardcovers. And so, yeah, I mean, they've really made it a lot more accessible to pick up and new readers to check out.
Wow. Yeah. Like me. So that's amazing. I didn't realize that. That's pretty cool. So, yeah, I'm sure that first one you mentioned is probably reprinting there's probably two things that somebody would need before Infinity Gauntlet for sure to fully appreciate Thanos and what all he's up to. One would be that Avengers story I was talking about where he tries to blow up all the stars using the stones before he realizes what else, you know, what they can actually do. And the other would be the quest, the Thanos quest. But that Avengers annual, number 7, it's available all over the place because when they do Thanos collections, it's usually in there. When they do Avengers collections, in there. I believe it was in the Warlock Masterworks. Oh, and that was the other one I was going to mention, is if you go back and read the old issues of Warlock, Thanos was kind of a supporting character in that. And they were actually allies for a while. So all the stuff with Pip the Troll and Gamora and Warlock and Thanos, they were all through those early issues of Warlock when Starlin first started out. And in that comic, in that Warlock comic, is where he lays a lot of the foundations for all of this. You have the Soul Gem, you know, you have Thanos loving death. A whole lot of that stuff pops up and comes from that old, and also the origins of the Magus, who will be really important in Infinity War. So yeah, it's definitely worth going back and getting, particularly that, I think it's Marvel Masterworks Warlock Volume 2. I think there's a Volume 1 that just has like the really early Starlin stuff on Warlock. But Volume 2, I think, is the one that actually includes the stuff with Thanos, the Infinity Gems, and all that leading up to the first big war with the Avengers and Spider-Man and the Thing, which I always like to say, that early story, that 77 Marvel 2-in-1 annual, that's the story where we find out that the only reason Peter Parker became Spider-Man was to stop Thanos. Everything else has been incidental. The only reason he's Spider-Man, yeah, is to knock the fishbowl over to free Warlock. Because as it's happening, as Spider-Man is like the only hero left standing and he swings around and knocks the glass ball over to free Warlock, as it's happening, Lord Chaos and Master Order are saying, "We're not defeated yet. Look, there's Spider-Man. And this is the reason we allowed him to become Spider-Man." I'm like, oh my gosh, come on, Starlin. Oh man, you know. So that's just classic Jim Starlin, really. So, all right. So let's talk some more about the story itself. So, in terms of all that plays out in this story, was it what you were expecting, and what met your expectations? What was better? What was worse? That kind of thing. Let's look at that.
Well, I certainly expected an epic, crossover event, big event, and this does deliver. I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than this. The scope, it affects the entire MCU. I mean, just it's huge. I mean, the Marvel Universe, rather. Mm-hmm. So it's huge. So that in its scope is impressive. I guess I was really surprised that it was going to that, like the movie. Thanos is the star. He's the main guy. You follow him like 90% of the story is with him. Mm-hmm. And everybody else is just sort of these minor characters. I think, like you said, Warlock is probably the second biggest character in this. Yeah. So it is kind of surprising when you're watching the movies, you'd be like, how are they going to do that without him?
Exactly. Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Exactly. And I don't know much about Adam Warlock, so his history, you know, we get, you know, they do a pretty good job at filling you in, at least on the basics, so that you can go forward with it. But yeah, I was really kind of surprised that Thanos was going to be the main focus. It's a hero's journey. Most comic stories are hero's journeys and not this one.
That's right. That's true. And it's very much like what they did with the Star Wars prequels, where Anakin is the featured character, and you're kind of following somebody that you know is going to be a bad guy. I guess the difference is in this one is that Thanos starts out as the bad guy, and he kind of is learning his lessons along the way. You know, he kind of comes to grips with his own deficiencies that he doesn't even want to admit as the story goes along. So, and by the way, having written the novel Lucian, I can sympathize with that approach to a story because that's kind of what I was doing. But it is interesting how Thanos dominates the pages. You do have a lot of Warlock. And I was going to say, Warlock really is a different character every time Starlin brings him back. I mean, He looks different every time Starlin brings him back. He'll go away for a while. It's like basically nobody else can write Warlock and nobody else should write Warlock. So when Starlin comes to Marvel, he'll do something with Warlock. And then Starlin will leave Marvel for a while and there won't be any Warlock. And then when Starlin comes back to Marvel, he brings Warlock back and he's totally different. And this happens over and over and over. So, you know, the Warlock of the early comics, like the late 60s or early 70s or whenever, that Warlock had like a big gold wrestler's belt. And I don't think he had a cape. And he was really weird. I mean, it was weird, quirky adventures. It was very much like Doctor Strange with Ditko and Lee. You know, it was really weird, cosmic, metaphysical stuff. And then every time he comes back, he's different, and it's interesting. I like this version of Warlock, because in this version of Warlock, he's like the field general, you know? He's like, I mean, there's that great scene in like issue 3 or 4 where Warlock confronts the big superpowers of the universe, you know, like Galactus and the Celestials and the Stranger and the Love and Hate and the In-Betweener and the Living Tribunal and, you know, all the super, super heavyweight cosmic beings of the Marvel Universe. And Galactus is like, I'm not taking any orders from this mortal. That's a joke. And then, like, every other one says, oh, I'll follow Warlock. Yeah. You know, they all just line up to pledge allegiance to Warlock. And Galactus is like, what the heck is going on here? And they're like, well, what do you say now, Galactus? And Galactus just kind of looks at you like, are you kidding? So I just love the idea that Warlock is so badass, right, in his own way, that even Galactus has to say, all right, you're the commander. I'm just a foot soldier here. What was your reaction reading that whole section where that all plays out?
Well, I'm not really one that really likes to compare, especially Marvel to DC, because it's done so much, and yeah. I get usually kind of annoyed by it. But I sort of have to point out that in this storyline in particular, Warlock strikes me as a very much like a Phantom Stranger type role.
Oh,
like,
interesting.
He's the guy that's gathering the forces. He's the one that's saying that there's an impending, you know, situation. He's gathering the forces and people. He's mysterious. Now, he's probably not as mysterious for the people who know his backstory in Marvel. But for my money, he's mysterious. I don't really know much about him other than what we get in this story. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, he's kind of fills that role, which is pretty cool. But at the end, you know, it does come down to, and I can't wait to talk about this because it's one of my favorite parts mm-hmm. of this book. But it comes down to a confrontation between him and Thanos, which is so unexpected the way it's written and the outcome of it that it's just it makes the whole saga really.
Well, I think that's a good point about how he's kind of the Phantom Stranger. And like I said, I've read enough DC to know who that is and kind of know what he's all about.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know him well enough to really have thought about that. So that's a really good comparison. I think you're dead on. And I think that you're right, too, that he's mysterious, but he's mysterious to everybody because, like I said, Starlin changes him. Warlock really is malleable. He's whatever Starlin needs him to be in a story. In the Avengers annual, 2-in-1 annual I was talking about from 77, he was very melancholy and defeatist and just kind of wandered through the story, you know, with his hand up to his brow going, oh, woe is me, what will we do? And then Thanos just kills him and takes the gem away from him. And he's, you know, he's dead. He's in the soul gem. And you're like, you know, well, that was so much for him that we... And by the way, this is really cool, Michael. This is so cool, is that way back in the early 70s in Warlock's own comic, there was one issue. I mean, this is just so cool. As a writer, you'll appreciate this. I love this. There was a story where Warlock finds out what his future's going to be, and he meets himself, and I'm trying to think how it played out. He basically encounters another version of himself who steals his soul. And he's like, oh, it's you. You know, I knew you'd come for me sooner or later. And he looks up and it's himself. It's Warlock. And Warlock's like, yes, you know, you always knew this was coming. This day was coming that I would come for you. And it's him, right? And he blasts him and takes his soul. That's in a comic like back in the early 70s. Then when you're reading that Avengers annual number 7, Warlock gets basically all but killed by Thanos, and Thanos goes off with the gem, and Warlock's lying there dying, and that other version of Warlock comes to him and says, you know, well, here I am, you knew this was coming, and it's the same thing from the other point of view. I know I totally screwed that up, but you see what I'm saying, right? You see him from one perspective, and then years later in another story, in another comic book, you see the same scene from the other direction. And as I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, you know. And so so that's who he was then. And then in this thing, he's, like you say, more the Phantom Stranger, more the general in charge of armies with his plan. I did also want to talk about the fact that different people have the gauntlet. And I didn't know who Nebula was. I had never heard of Nebula when I first read this. I found out later that she popped up as kind of a minor villain in the Avengers, maybe in the late 80s or something, maybe Roger Stern, and claimed to be related to Thanos. Then we get her in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as basically a cyborg in Guardians of the Galaxy. But I never saw it coming, really, that she would end up in kind of the same sort of situation in the Avengers Infinity War that she's in this comic, right? Because in this comic, she's like a zombie. I didn't even know what she looked like normally. I thought, okay, she's this zombie character, apparently. I didn't know there was a regular Nebula. And when she's like suspended in air being tortured, that's like what happened in the movie, where Nebula's like being stretched apart, you know?
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with her at all until, from the movie.
Yeah.
That's my history with her. But I did find it interesting how Thanos was, he seemed to enjoy torturing her similarly to the way he does in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. I had forgotten that. I mean, I saw the movie and I saw him torturing her and floating there. I had forgotten that a similar character with a similar but not the same relationship to him with the same name is in a similar situation in the comic, you know. So like I said, there are things in this comic that kind of tie into the movie, but they changed them sufficiently that I just didn't even notice it until I went back and reread the comic. So, but I was going to ask you, so different characters have the Infinity Gauntlet. What did you think about who had it, and did you expect who would end up getting it from time to time? Like, I mean, Nebula spends at least like two issues with it. I didn't see that coming.
No, not at all. I love the fact that she gets it, because she's the last character that you think is going to be capable of getting it, just because of her situation. She's just a zombie through most of it. And then when she does get it, yeah, you find out, oh, there's something worse than Thanos having it.
Yes. Well, and it was interesting, too, with the hindsight of knowing how it played out this time, because I reread it about a year ago, and so I remembered that she got it. So when I was rereading it last night, you notice the little things that they do as a writer and artist to set the stage, you know. For being just a character being tortured, there's no reason to show her more than a couple of times. And yet all through the first four issues, you're constantly reminded that she's there. Every three or four pages, you'll see her in the foreground or her in the background there. And, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, so this time when I read it, I'm thinking, okay, they're just making us remember, you know, because you don't want her to come out of nowhere at the end, right? She needs, the reader needs to know that she's right there in striking range, even though she's a zombie. She's right there where she could grab it if the opportunity came. And that was very effective, I thought. Because if she had just, you know, if they hadn't mentioned her in three issues and all of a sudden she's got the gauntlet, that'd be kind of a ripoff.
Absolutely. No, like I said, it's brilliant. I love that. I was like, oh, when she put it on, I was like, oh, whoa, okay. There's a lot of masterful strokes in this story by Starlin.
Yeah, I know Starlin has a great reputation as an artist, but I think when he writes the cosmic stuff, right, when he writes the life and death and all the ultimate cosmic things, I mean, there's no other writer I would rather have doing this kind of stuff than him. I know he does kind of repeat himself after a few years. I mean, in fact, honestly, to me, Infinity War is the last big thing like this he did that I really loved. He kind of has his shtick, and he does it fantastically a few times, and then he does it again, and then he does it again. So eventually I'm kind of like, all right, Jim, you're awesome, but let's do something different. But, you know, because he kind of does the same sort of thing in Dreadstar. When the two empires show up in Dreadstar and you have the Thanos-looking guy, and I'm like, okay, you're back to the same. But I don't know how much Starlin you've read over the years and if that's as much of an issue for you.
actually, it's funny because I know that he's got the reputation as being like the space guy in the Marvel Universe, but I hadn't really read much of it until now. So I pretty much knew Starlin. The best thing that I noted for him for was a series that he did over DC called Batman the Cult. Right. And of course, The Death in the Family, the Batman stuff he did, which was really good as well. So I know he's capable of more than just space stories.
Yes. Yeah, it's just, it seems like he, when he gets these tools, this is like the, what he goes back to. And I mean, it's just what he loves, and we all, you know, we enjoy it. But like I said, even when he did, even when he did for Epic Comics, the Dreadstar thing, which I was, you know, I was reading in Metamorphosis Odyssey and the Epic magazine, and then and followed it all the way through the graphic novel and into the ongoing comic. Even there, he kind of went back to the same sort of thing. So I, even though it's not the Marvel Universe and it's another galaxy, but the other one really cool moment in this story I wanted to talk to you about. I love the whole business where Warlock has the Silver Surfer in reserve, and the Surfer's like, I really need to go help. My guy, my friends are going to get killed. I got to go help. And Warlock's like, no, wait, you know? And the whole thing is Warlock waiting to see Thanos raise his hand. And the, and he sends all those other heroes to make Thanos raise his hand. You know, I love that. And the split second that Thanos raises his hand up, Warlock's like, go! And the Surfer goes, boom! And almost grabs it. I love that scene, and he misses it. What did you think about all that?
No, that's great. I love that. You know, it's a trope you see in movies a lot where, you know, the guy who's like, you know, showing he's with a sharpshooter or something. He's like, wait, like not, and the guy's just wanting to shoot, and you're like, wait, and so, but it works so well here, and yeah, the fact that, you know, there's a lot of times where, you know, you just know kind of going in that the forces that are against him are going to fail, and yet it happened. I mean, it happens over and over and over again, and you would think it would get kind of old. But I think the fact that it gets bigger and bigger with his opponents makes it interesting, as well as it does lead to, like, it's part of the actual character story of Thanos. Because, you know, I mean, surely he's got the power. You know, he could have dealt with the big bad, like, right away and not had to deal with any of this. But the fact that his own hubris, like, kind of defeats him is just, like, amazingly well done in this.
Yeah, I mean, the moral of this entire story, at least in terms of Thanos, is that he thinks, you know, he spends a lot of time talking about only I, you know, can use this thing properly. Only I know what I'm doing here. And yet by the end, he realizes, yeah, I really have no business with this thing. I'm gonna go grow some corn.
Absolutely. It's his arc, and it's one that I just have not seen, at least not seen to the level that this is well done.
Yeah.
Because it all leads up to it. Starlin really writes it well, and those clues are there. Like, it's earned. It doesn't just come out of nowhere.
Absolutely. I got to mention one thing in passing while we're talking about that scene, though, with the Surfer, because this is cool. You may not know about this. There's a what if, because there's always a what if for something like this, right? I mean,
probably like a ton of them.
The Korvac saga has a great what if, where what if Korvac actually did win, you know, and kill all the Avengers and take over the universe. And it's a fantastic cautionary tale story. Let me put it this way. The Korvac what if does not have a happy ending. But the what if for this one, at least the one I know about, is that the Silver Surfer grabs the gauntlet. That's the turning point. When he comes flying through there, the Surfer gets it off Thanos' hand. And you're thinking, oh, so the Silver Surfer's God now, and not just Jesus. You got to be thinking, well, that's not a bad turn of events. The Surfer would be a benevolent God. And as always happens in what if, it takes that Twilight Zone turn, you know. The what ifs are always like the Twilight Zone, where you're like, it's not as good as you think it would be. So I recommend both of those, actually. If those of you out there listening, if you read the Korvac saga and the Avengers, which is an all-time classic, there's a really good what if. I think it's called What If the Avengers Had Become the Pawns of Korvac. They had to call it that because it had to have the Avengers in the title, but it's really What If Korvac Won. And this one is, I think, what if the Silver Surfer had gotten the Infinity Gauntlet or something from Thanos? I don't know what it's called. But anyway, it's a really good story, too. So So toward the end of this story now, there was a part you were mentioning you wanted to talk about. I want to make sure we get it in.
Sure. Well, I think we have to talk about, you know, since we're talking about Thanos, we have to talk for his at least outward reason for doing this, which is to win the hand, if you will, of death.
The skeletal bony hand of death. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Talk about Thanos and his love or his, you know, desire, his obsession with death.
Yes.
Which is different than his motive is different than it's in the movie, obviously. I don't know whether they just didn't feel comfortable with that part of his character, or it's just too much to explain, or for other reasons. But the movie is what the movie is, and I think it works for the movie. But in this storyline, it really works a lot better, that his obsession with death, and that is fascinating. I don't know. Now, you'll have to tell me if that was his true goal all along, or is that something new for just this story?
No, that goes back at least to the Warlock issues and to the Avengers Annual number 7. In Avengers Annual number 7, we always joke that he's trying to blow up all the stars to impress a girl. And, you know, that's basically what he's doing. And in this one, he figures out an even more impressive way to do it. Because in Avengers Annual number 7, he was actually going, he actually used the 6 gems to make a big gun that could blow up stars. It's funny that that story actually came out about the same time as Star Wars. He basically creates the Death Star, Star Killer Death Star, but it's not like Starlin ripped off Star Wars, because it came out the same summer. They came out at like the same time. But
wow, same wavelength.
Yeah, but he was going to have to fly around from star to star in his big spaceship, blowing them out one at a time. Whereas in Infinity Gauntlet, he finds a way to just do it with a snap of a finger. And he doesn't have to blow up stars, he just makes people disappear. But yeah, I did think it was interesting in the movie that I think that the whole I'm in love with the personification of death and I'm trying to impress her, I can see them saying, you know, that works when Jim Starlin's writing a comic book. I'm not sure that works in a movie. Plus, you'd have had to lay the foundation that death is a character. And they hadn't done that either, you know. So without Warlock and without death, 2 of the 3 elements you need for that story to work are not even present. So you have to just look at Thanos on his own and say, what would be his motivation? We still want to get to the same goal, which is he kills half the universe. We need a new reason why he would do it. And so they left the character the same and just totally changed his motivations for doing the same thing he does in the comic.
Yeah. I mean, in the movie, he's a little bit more, I don't know how you want to put it. I mean, I think he's a little bit more, he came off a little bit more altruistic.
Yeah.
He does here, you know?
Yeah.
So that worked for him in the movie a lot. And here he doesn't hide away. He doesn't hide the fact that he's the bad guy.
No. Yeah. That's a good point that, like, in the movie, you're left with people debating, well, was Thanos actually right? There's nobody reading these comic books and going to say, you know, Thanos might have been right to impress a girl by killing half the universe. I mean, nobody's going to say that that's a good idea. Even what's funny, even Death herself doesn't think it's a good idea, you know. And that's one thing that was never made entirely clear, I didn't think, in this story. All the way through, she keeps rejecting him. And it's basically like she just keeps rolling her eyes at everything he tries. You know, he keeps thinking, oh, well, this will impress her. Oh, well, this will impress her. And every time he does something, she's just kind of like, whatever, dude, and walks away, you know. And Thanos keeps blowing up all of her henchmen. But actually, I think he blows up one of them in Thanos' quest and blows up the other one in this one. But I know he blows up at least 2 of her henchmen. But it's never, was it clear to you? It never was that clear to me how exactly why she was rejecting his efforts and why she didn't approve.
Yeah, no, that's what the beauty of it. I love the fact that that's a mystery.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know if she's even capable of reciprocating.
Yeah.
But it's just a mystery. She might as well just be like a wall. Like, it's just that he's banging his head against.
Yeah. Well, and there's several possible reasons that keep getting suggested, but they're suggested by Mephisto. So you can't and most of the time, nope. most of the times you kind of realize that what Mephisto is doing is not trying to actually help him. He's actually trying to kind of hinder him a little bit, you know, keep him under wraps, keep him under control a little bit, tamp him down, you know. So everything Mephisto says to him about, oh, well, she didn't like that, but what she really wants you to do is this. And I love that one moment where he actually says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to kill half the universe. And he starts to raise his hand. And I love Mephisto's little thought balloon is like, he's actually going to do it. Even the devil is freaked out, right? It's like, even the devil hadn't thought of doing that. You got to love where Thanos is like, hey, the devil, hold my beer, you know? That's pretty impressive, I guess. Okay, so ultimately, Warlock ends up... Is there anything else we need to mention before we get to Warlock getting the gauntlet that you wanted to talk about?
Well, you mentioned the snap, and I just have to point out, I love the fact that it's a snap. It's mm-hmm. it's the basis for the movie. I mean, now that snap has gone global and is part of pop culture, which is amazing.
That's true. And it interesting, when it burned out the gauntlet to do that in the movie, I was like, what? Because obviously, it didn't hurt the gauntlet at all in the comic. So I was nope. That was one of those moments in the movie where I was like, whoa. Like I said, I totally expected Doctor Strange to be the strategic guy. He's the logical guy if you don't have Warlock to take over that role. But I did not see burning out the whole gauntlet coming. So do you think in the next movie they're going to redo it or something? Or what do you kind of feel like is going to happen with that? I'm not really sure.
I don't know. I mean, I've heard so many theories, and I'm trying not to develop my own because I just want to go in and enjoy it. So I have no idea how they're going to, you know, and this doesn't offer any clues.
No.
So if anybody's worried, like, or if anybody's thinking, I'll read Infinity Gauntlet, that'll tell me how they're going to resolve it. It doesn't.
And you know, the funny thing, I'm going to talk briefly in a second about Infinity War, Infinity Crusade, not from the standpoint of spoiling it for everybody, but just in terms of what they are. And I got to tell you, when they called the first one Infinity War, and I had just reread the whole trilogy, and I was like, okay, well, if they don't have Warlock for the first part, there's no way that it can have anything to do with the comic Infinity War, because you have to have Warlock. I mean, Warlock can be replaced in this story, right? I mean, it's obvious in the movie that they did, right? They took this story and just replaced Warlock with Doctor Strange, pretty much. And Iron Man has a much bigger role, too, obviously, because it's the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You literally, there is no story without Warlock in Infinity War, as I think the way this one ends would indicate, right? I mean, if he's got the gauntlet and you don't have him, then, you know, so... So, yeah, it ends up with Warlock getting it. And so you didn't know a lot about Warlock. What did you think about the ending in terms of Warlock having the gauntlet and what he does and everything? Because even I was kind of like, oh, this is interesting.
Yeah, I think it was pretty clear that he was going to end up with it. And whether or not that was his motivation through all of it, I don't know. I mean, that's definitely something that I will probably reread this. It'll be interesting to see... going through it to see if he's kind of moving things and moving the pieces so that he can actually end up with it.
See, that's interesting. I never got that. And like I said, I just reread it for like the third time last night and this morning, and it never occurred to me that he would end up with it. I guess I just kept seeing him as the heroic character, even though he's Warlock, so he is literally like the grayest character in the Marvel Universe. But I just kept imagining that they would defeat Thanos and take the gauntlet away. And as you may or may not know, you know, much, much later, they essentially deactivate the gauntlet and split it up. And I think that, like, this is not even in the next couple of stories. If you go on and read Infinity War and Infinity Crusade, you won't even... This is way after that. They basically say it's too... You know, like, the Living Tribunal says this thing is too dangerous for one person to have, and so the gems no longer work together.
I think I was aware that had happened.
Yeah,
that they had split them all up. So I knew that going in. I wasn't sure of how that's the way this was going to end when I read Gauntlet, but
you're right. Yeah,
I was aware that had happened.
Yeah, so I guess I just always thought that's how this would end, would be that happening. And so to actually have it still working and still intact and Warlock having it, I'm like, whoa, because because it really, you know, one thing the Infinity Gauntlet kind of represents in the superhero type universe is the ultimate corruption, right? It's not corrupt by itself, but when a mortal being has it, it's just too tempting to do blah, you know, whatever you want. Remake the whole, you know, universe the way you want. It really is the power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely thing. It's basically a big MacGuffin for that saying, you know. And so you think even absolutely. So you think even Warlock, you know, even the Silver Surfer. I mean, is there anybody you trust with this thing? And no, there's nobody. Because if Warlock and the Surfer can't even be trusted with it, then you're pretty much at that point out of, I mean, Captain America maybe. But
that's the only one I could think of.
Yeah, the 4th of July would be an awesome holiday every year. It'd be like Christmas and New Year's all combined. But other than that,
we'd be living in the 40s forever.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. So, all right. Well, to kind of give you a hint of what's to come. So the Infinity War comes out of this. And the setup of it is that Warlock has the gauntlet and he's afraid that his mortal good and bad tendencies could cause him to do bad things with it. So he takes certain steps to keep that from happening and it really backfires. And so Infinity War is a great story, but it really is now Warlock in that same sort of position that Thanos was in this one. Where, you know, he's got it from the beginning, and what comes from that? How does that play out? So Infinity War is a great story, but if you know, there's one thing you have to know about Warlock that'll make it all make sense, and that is, I don't know if you're familiar with the Magus?
No.
Okay. The Magus goes all the way back to when Warlock was a solo character in his own book back in the early 70s, and Warlock discovered that in the future, he turns evil. He even gets a patented Starlin afro. Because I've always said, you know, one way you know a character's a villain in Starlin's world is when they have a big afro. And so he turns purple instead of red and gold, and he has a big afro. And so that's the Magus. That's like evil Warlock. And so you can imagine if the future of Warlock is turning into the Magus, and now Warlock is God, .. right? You can kind of see that bad things could happen. Okay. One thing about Infinity War, though, is it spends a lot of time with everybody kind of standing around. There were a couple of issues of Infinity Gauntlet where all the heroes are just kind of standing around waiting for the cosmic beings to do stuff, right? That was one of the things I didn't love about Infinity Gauntlet is there's you know, the heroes spend a lot of time standing around waiting. Infinity Crusade, oh my Lord in heaven, Infinity Crusade is terrible because I'm not going to give anything away, but the plot of Infinity Crusade, the third of the three things, it makes logical sense that that's where he would go, right? You can totally see that that's where he would go, Starlin meaning. But, oh my gosh, at least four of the six issues of Infinity Crusade are all the heroes standing around in like Avengers headquarters or whatever in front of big TVs and nothing is happening. They're just standing there. And you're like, why have every major hero in the Marvel Universe from the X-Men, the Avengers, the Fantastic Four, you know, Spider-Man, the Hulk, why have all of them in this story and then spend like four issues with them all just standing around like they're at a cocktail party? It's crazy. So if you ask almost anybody, they will probably say, oh, Infinity War is really good. Infinity Crusade, don't even try. It's a huge disappointment. I mean, it's worth reading for completeness, you know, but it was just a huge disappointment to me. So, and to most people. So what is left? What have we not covered as we get ready to wrap things up here about Infinity Gauntlet? And I guess let me go ahead and invite you back, by the way, if you do read Infinity War and you want to talk about it too, absolutely. We'll do another show and cover that one.
Oh, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. Because, yeah, I'm curious. I am very curious. I have heard, you know, that they've got the reputation of getting worse as they go on. Mm. So I don't know if that's true, but I am curious to follow up, as well as to maybe even get some of the prequel stuff. I'm really interested in Thanos' quest, how he acquired it.
Yeah, so that's a fun story.
I do think I'll do that. But I also, I just have to reiterate, and as we're winding down, I have to reiterate how much I just love, it's not the very end, but the end result. When you usually think when the hero and the villain match up, it's going to be, certainly in a Marvel book, it's going to be, they're just going to fight. There's going to be a big battle of epic proportions. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it's just they're like hanging out in like an apartment or something. And that's where Warlock drops the bomb on him. Like, you don't feel you deserve this. Yeah. And that's why we can defeat you all the time. And like I said, usually that seems like it's not earned. But a few things. The fact that Thanos is obsessed with death. And we find that, that's just sort of drilled into us that he's got some embodiment there that he's projecting on her, that he doesn't feel he's worthy of her. And the whole story, plus the fact that Warlock was in the Soul Gem. So he knows Thanos better than anybody. Of course, that's the way it's going to end.
Mm-hmm. It occurs to me as you're saying that this whole exact story could be done as like a high school, John Hughes movie, where the nerdy kids, imagine what's his name from Weird Science and Breakfast Club, right? Imagine that he's in love with one of the Breakfast Club girls. I can't ever think of anybody's name anymore. I'm getting old and forgetful, but let's say he's, so the kid from Weird Science is in love with one of the hot chicks from Breakfast Club. And so he gets a hold of this hot rod car. And through most of the story, he's kind of like driving around trying to impress her, and she's just not impressed. And so like the really clever high school, not so much the bully, but the guy that likes to manipulate the other kids, he's like in the passenger seat going, well, why don't you drive by her going really fast? Why don't you honk your horn? Or why don't you try this? He's like, yeah, that'll get her. And then like at the end of the story, he crashes the car and somebody else ends up with the car all fixed up and goes to visit him, and he's back to being a nerd again. And he's like, yeah, what I realize is that she just doesn't like me and I'm better off being a nerd. And I had the seeds of my own failure in me all along because I'm not a hot rod driver. I'm a nerd, That's the same story, Mike.
It really is. It's funny that you went with the John Hughes route because I was thinking it was more Shakespearean, but yes. That works too.
It does. Yes, you're right. It's true. It's just funny to me that this is, I guess what I'm saying is, this is a timeless story in a lot of ways, right? It's a story of somebody who has grand ambitions and has to finally admit that no mortal is up to those grand ambitions, including them. And he's like, I'm going to go grow some crops and use my costume as a scarecrow. I really like that. I like the ending a lot because we're so used to Thanos being just this implacable enemy, that is just relentless. And at the end of this story, he basically says, yeah, screw it. I give up. I'm glad I walked away alive from all that. And I have no more interest in it, so. Yeah, I really do like that.
Well, he's confronted with the fact that he doesn't want to do this, really. That it's not satisfying to him. It's not really what his goal is. And once he accepts that, there's no reason to... I mean, he can just go and farm. So it's so powerful, and it works really well here. And I know that we've spent a lot of time praising Starlin for this masterpiece too, but we have to mention how both George Perez and Ron Lim are just amazing at the top of their game in this book.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The art's beautiful. It's another thing that kind of suffers as the series is, you get into the second and third series, but yeah, for this one, they really were rocking. And I mean, this was never like the biggest comic of the year when it was coming out, or the month, because this was right in the middle of X-Mania, which is, it's kind of hard even to imagine now, but for those of you that are younger out there listening, there was a period there in the early 90s especially where it was just the X-Men ran Marvel. Every new X anything that Marvel pooped out sold 8 million copies, and that was all that the comic shops wanted. And so that's one of the things that made me so excited about Starlin doing this story, is that right in the middle of this period where I had no interest in getting back into comics because everything was X-Men, 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 here came this old school story where the Avengers and Thanos and Warlock and the Silver Surfer and Doctor Strange were at the forefront, and the Hulk, and you didn't have to deal with the X-Men dominating it. They barely are in it.
They're barely in it, yeah.
At all. I mean, Cyclops has a couple of scenes late, but that's about it. So they show up a little
bit
more.
And Wolverine, of course. You can't do it without Wolverine.
Yeah, Wolverine. Yeah, yeah, obviously, exactly. I mean, there was like a rule at Marvel. He had to appear in several pages and look mean or whatever. But yeah, you do get that great scene where the Hulk and Wolverine sit down and have a conversation, which I thought was, that was like worth the price of that whole issue by itself.
Yeah, that was cool. There's a lot of like little character moments that are really amazing. Mm. If you like any of these characters and as a Spider-Man fan, I mean, mm-hmm. it works because there's some really nice moments there. Yeah. As a Spider-Man guy and I'm interested in a lot of the other characters as well. When they're defeated the way they are, it's brutal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've done pretty much justice to Infinity Gauntlet. It is an all-time classic. I love it. It's one of my favorite stories. I don't think it measures quite up to that Avengers Annual and Marvel 2-in-1 story. Again, you and I have talked before about this, that part of it is it's what you read first, and that was one of the first Marvel stories I ever read. But I also think that that story was very clean and pure in the sense that it was Thanos. He was the villain. He had a goal. He tried to do it. He failed and he was defeated, right? It's a more of a classical structure. Whereas this one is a lot more nuanced, as we've just been talking about. So this one is excellent. It's really, really well done, but it is a little more complex and a little more nuanced. And it, like you said, it doesn't end with the main villain being really who you think it is. In fact, I would argue there's not really a main villain by the time this whole thing is over. They're still trying to keep it away from Thanos, but the gauntlet. But
right.
I mean, you know, it's not like he's totally forgiven or whatever. And in fact, I like how everybody's trying to get the gauntlet when it's lying there on the ground at the end. It's like the Hulk is like, screw it, I'm getting it. You know, we're going to have a Hulkiverse. You know, and then
I can't even imagine.
Everybody.
That's a what-if story that I would mind.
Well, you know, the one I thought would be interesting is Drax the Destroyer in his big dumb form. And it would be interesting if Drax got it, because the first thing Drax would do is turn himself into whatever form he preferred. And that makes me wonder, would he turn himself back into the cosmic, normal-sized, energy-blasting, flying Drax from, like, the late 70s, like 1979, when he was teaming up with Captain Marvel? Or would he go all the way back to when he was a human before he got killed and Kronos turned him into, you know, the instrument of Thanos' destruction? Or would he turn himself into Dave Bautista? I mean, he has a lot of options, you know. It would be interesting to see what Drax would do given the gauntlet, because he has a lot of options. But I did like how it's so corrupting, it's so tempting that, I mean, theoretically they're all diving for it to keep it away from Thanos and Nebula. But you look at their faces in that picture and you got to wonder, there's got to be a large percentage of it that they want it. You know what I mean? That when you have the chance to be God, I guess even though you know how bad it's going to be and how corrupting, you can't resist it, right? I mean, you would dive
absolutely.
For it.
I mean,
yeah.
This is the, you know, the ultimate power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't refuse it. It's just this, like I said, it's this story is like, Thanos is a crack addict and it's a big block of crack sitting there. I mean, it's the ultimate temptation. That's why Mephisto is there, right? He's the tempter.
Sure.
So, all right. Well, I guess we can wrap up there. This has been a lot of fun. And like I say, Mike, if you end up moving on to another element of this big Starlin saga, we can certainly talk about that in the future, and appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. Sunday morning comic chat has been really fun. And I, yeah, as soon as I finished this, I went to the internet and I was like, oh, I wonder if Vans covered this, because I got to know more.
I think we did I did a solo show where I just talked about Thanos in general and his career. And I probably mentioned this a little bit, but never really a deep dive into one aspect of it. So I would be happy to go back through and do step by step on it. Sounds great. So, okay, well, Avengers Assemble Podcast is going to get out of here for another episode. I know these are few and far between, but we try to preserve them for quality and not just crank something out. So when we get another Avengers topic, and I'm sure the next one, if we don't have another conversation with Mike before then, we'll be talking about the new Captain Marvel movie coming up in March. Mike, you might come on for that. We'll see whoever wants to come on and talk about Captain Marvel. And we got Avengers Endgame. So there's a lot of fun stuff coming up in 2019 on Avengers Assemble. So we're going to get out of here for another episode, and we'll see you guys down the road. Our world's about to break, so I'm empty and lost when we wake. There's no way to go back. I'm
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
As always, we have to thank the fine folks who keep our programs on the air via Patreon.com. And that can be you. If you enjoy the things you hear on the White Rocket Entertainment Network, such as the White Rocket Podcast, the Avengers Assemble Podcast, the AU Wishbone, the Open Wheel Racing Show, the On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, of course, our big James Bond show, all of these are part of the White Rocket Network, and they are supported by all of our patrons through Patreon.com. For as little as $1 a month, you can support the show and also get a number of rewards that you can find out about by visiting www.plexico.net, P-L-E-X-I-C-O.net, and just click right through the Patreon link, or you can just go to Patreon.com and search for Van Plexico, me. So we have to, as always, thank the folks who are already our patrons and supporters, and that includes Brendan O'Dwyer, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, Carl Von Drunker, and Phil Amthor, as well as Winston Boddy, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. And there's Johnny Caldwell, Reynolds Wolf, Joshua Corbett, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, Theodore Gary, Shannon Butson, Taylor, David Hegler, Mickey B., Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Dave Powell, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Spanky, Brant Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, and our one-time and anonymous donors. Thank you guys so much for helping keep us on the air. Again, for as little as $1 a month, you can certainly give more, and that will help to pay all of our bills and keep us producing all these shows and the other things that White Rocket does. So again, visit www.plexico.net, P-L-E-X-I-C-O.net, or go to patreon.com and just search Van Plexico. And we appreciate everything you do to help us do what we do for you.